Wait, I think, yes, I knew it. All I needed to do was cross-reference the vestigial flange and hardwire the interocitors, and I'm in. Hello, all. Future Mike here, and I'm coming to you from the Edit Bay Mach 5. Yeah, it's not as nice as the Edit Bay 9000 with all its bells and whistles, but the guys are using that for, you know, the podcast you're about to listen to. Sadly, no, this is not my glorious return to GameStore profits. 2018 is still having a tremendous time kicking the Perna family in the teeth, and I'm still trying to figure out how to wrestle all of that, on top of just being a dad of a 9-month-old baby boy whose adorableness does not entirely counteract his intense energy levels, especially since he started becoming mobile. No, I'm just popping in here to remind folks that Inroads Ministries is sending a team to PAX Unplugged this year, and we need your help. This is literally the first convention that Inroads is sending an actual team to, so we're kind of giddy with anticipation. This is the East Coast's largest gaming convention. However, this is also only the second Unplugged ever, so we're kind of hoping that our team grows up with it. Our team of six lovely folks include a bunch of people that you'll have seen around the tavern, including myself and Sean, who are representing the board, as well as Jeff, our social media and community support volunteer. We won't have a booth this year, so rather than having people come to us, we're going to be going out kind of guerrilla style, just to go about the business of meeting people, playing with people, getting to know them, and well, just trying to make their convention experience all the better for having hung out with us. Now, when I talk about what we're doing, you'll see a lot of the typical stuff. We will be getting audio, possibly video, if I can figure out the logistics, from the convention. We'll be teaching, playing games, all over the floor. Jeff's even got himself a place at a booth, at a publisher's booth, and so he's going to be there all day, and we're excited about the relationships that are going to kind of blossom from that. I'll be celebrating the glorious legacy of being a dwarf bard by running around as a dwarf bard, collecting stories of how people are unique and awesome in return for swag. Pretty much the whole breakdown of it is that each of us have our own kind of flavor to this, and we're all looking to do our best all over this convention to really just fulfill the mission of Inroads, which is to build meaningful relationships that demonstrate the love of God to others. Where we need your help is to tackle all the practical elements of making this happen, aka donations. All the stuff we want to do costs money. We want to give out cards, buttons, stickers, lanyards, that sort of stuff. Not just, you know, meaningless swag, but stuff that really does connect to people. I have cards for being a dwarf bard and what that means. We actually have blessing cards to bless cardboard for board gamers and to bless dice for role players. And it's just a cool kind of way to connect with people and make that special moment of having met up with us and been hanging out with us and the memories of all that. We want to work with a publisher-led initiative that kind of helps homeless people who are in the area that kind of congregate around the convention center every time there's a large event. We especially want to go out and hand out things like basic toiletries and that sort of stuff. Nothing big, but it all is stuff that needs to be gathered and collected and put together, and we need help with that. Team, all of that stuff, all the stuff we want to give, all the stuff that we want to use to make a splash and to reach out to people and have that cool moment, team that with all the unfun things like paying for badges, a hotel room, parking, all that little stuff that no one thinks about unless you're actually the one planning it. We desperately need your help because all of that can be daunting really quickly. We hope that you'll consider partnering with us, obviously through prayer, but also by donating if you can. You can go to the Inroads Unplugged article in the news and events section of the Inroads site. I'll be sure to put a link in there. And you'll see pictures of the team, you'll see a breakdown of what we do with a lot more detail as to what I just did right now. You'll see a way you can donate, and you'll even see links to a store where you can buy Inroads kind of related gear, including the Inroads Unplugged team shirt, You can see all of that in that store, and all of the proceeds from that between now and the convention are going to be going towards getting our team there at Unplugged. Look, I'm very excited to see what God does this year, and I hope you'll consider joining with us through your donation. And if you're planning on being at Unplugged yourself, please find us. We're going to be kind of hard to miss. At least I will be. We'd love to say hi and to spend time with you guys. I've already had a number of people message me saying that they're looking forward to meeting me in person after hearing me on the podcast and talking with me in the tavern. And that makes me really excited. All of this said, the time has come to go back to the other stuff and leave the podcasting to the other guys. Well, I guess I'll just unwind this and future Mike out.
Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I'm your host, Daniel Fisher, and along with me today is the one, the only, the illustrious Mr. Jeff Romo.
I feel like I should be polished.
Polished.
You know, I should have like makeup and everything. You know how they have people in those the chairs right before they go on an interview
with a little tissue paper
around the tissue paper around the collar, right? Exactly. Yeah. And I'm not. I feel like I should be wearing a suit now. Yeah. I don't have that. How the heck are you, man?
I'm making it. It's Wednesday night. We just got home from Bible study and things are going pretty good, but I'm tired.
Yeah.
I really am today. Today's just been a rough day.
But we can both say that we're doing a little bit better than our dear friend T.R. Knight, who is unfortunately very under the weather right now.
We heard he has the bubonic plague.
I don't know if I want to go that far. Maybe a cold. Might be the flu. I'm not sure. But it's so rare for him. We were talking about earlier about how rarely he gets sick. And when he does get sick, everybody stand back. You know, it might be equivalent of bubonic plague. We don't know.
Right.
We don't know.
As my wife would call it, the man flu.
Man flu. That's right. We get a little sniffle and immediately we go and we grab the magical space blanket and crawl into the couch and turn on Netflix and say, somebody get me a doctor, please.
And eat powdered Ovaltine by the spoonful, hoping we get a little bit of vitamin C out of it.
Oh my gosh. It's been a while since I've done that. My wife put a stop to that. Toot sweet.
My wife said, you need to take multivitamins every day so you don't get sick.
Yeah. You know what? My wife was really cool. She bought me those little gummy chewable things.
That's what I had for a long time.
And
I was eating Flintstone vitamins when I met her.
Well, I had a little bit of a problem while I was doing, you know, like game prep. I'd be at the computer and I'd have like a handful and I'm just eating them. Like gummy bears. And she comes in, she's like, what the heck are you doing? I'm just prepping game. Look, I'm on the screen and I'm prepping. And she's like, what are you doing with the gummies? I'm like, I'm eating them. Candy. She's like, no, they're not candy. Those are vitamins that I bought for you. I'm like, oh.
You know, I read a really horrible article about that a while back. About an immigrant that came over and he didn't realize that was medicine. And he, in his favorite candy, it was gummies, and so he was buying 2-3 bottles a week, eating it like candy.
Oh my gosh,
got really sick and almost died.
Well, I had a stomach ache and a sensitivity to light. No, I'm kidding. That last I did get a stomach ache though, but yeah, so that was an interesting education. But thanks to my wife for caring for me, and thanks for Costco for offering the gigantic bottle of what I thought was candy. So there you go.
You're so fancy, your candy comes in a jar.
I know, right? I thought, wow, we're moving up. You know what, it's been a, you're mentioning rough weeks. I think a lot of us at En-ROADS have been having a bit of a rough week. You know, TR just went through a loss in his family just a few weeks ago, and unfortunately my father-in-law passed away, and you know, we're sitting here on Wednesday night. It was about 2 nights ago. He's been going through a very long decline. He's, you know, had renal failure due to diabetes. He had heart failure, and he was diagnosed with that severe heart failure about 2 months ago. And that's, I think we were on a recording last a few weeks ago, and I mentioned that he had about 6 months to a year, and unfortunately, that was not that long. But I don't know. We talked about this before the call, and folks, you know, bear with us just briefly. We'll get to the game stuff here very soon. And in fact, if it's okay, maybe we'll kind of have this be our archive dive, maybe?
We've been busy. You know, life has just been throwing a few of us curveballs and stuff like that. And, you know, we will tell you, last recording, guys, you got like a whole segment of archive diving.
Right.
You know, this is our reoccurring theme. And Mike, we're sorry.
Yeah. If we want to be sticklers, we can say that over the last week, we have done the archive dive and we've been playing the game of life. So,
well, I was actually going to go a little bit further than that.
Oh.
Because we've both been prepping our D&D games.
Yes.
And technically, that's how a Dungeon Master starts playing, is we've got to prep for that game. And
very true. And 5e's been out there for a long time. I don't know what you're prepping with. Are you prepping 5e? Or?
Well, I'll tell you, a happy moment in my life was my wife, since we paid off all our debt but our house this week, she told me I could finally buy physical copies of the Dungeons and Dragons core rule books. And
you've been reading them off of Fantasy Grounds, right?
Yeah, because I purchased them on Fantasy Grounds.
And you only have the one place where you can look at it.
Yeah, and so I couldn't take a book to work. I couldn't, you know, do anything like that. And it was kind of frustrating. You know, I do keep a couple books in my backpack, like my Castles and Crusades and stuff like that. And Savage
World.
That's
classic.
Yeah.
If you grab those and you looked at them, that's an archive dive.
Oh, yeah. So I did. There we go. I looked at them. There's our archive dive.
I'll ring the
Dungeons
bell.
Dungeons and Dragons. Castles and Crusades. That. All that. So, that's the one downfall about investing in a virtual tabletop, is when you buy your books, you can't take them with you unless you take your computer. Unless, with Fantasy Grounds, you can't. Because it's limited to a Windows interface and a computer, unless you're running a Windows Microsoft Surface tablet. But I know on Roll20,
hopefully not for long.
Yeah, on Roll20 though, you have access to that on your tablet, don't you?
Yeah, you do. The app, the Android app, is good for kind of maintaining a table during a game and like rolling dice. You know, looking at the files that you've already kind of put together. And I guess in small part, you can also reference through the rule books that you've purchased, or if you're just using the SRD. But to be honest, if I use my tablet, and I've done this a few times, well, I shouldn't say a few because it's very rare I get to play in a game. But when I do play in a game, I actually will use the tablet's web browser, because I'll have Chrome on the tablet, and I'll use the web browser.
You can go to desktop mode.
Yeah, and it actually works better, I think, than the app. Yeah. So no lack of shout-outs to the folks who do the development and stuff out there for the app. I'm sure newer and different things are coming to it, but I think the priority is more on the web-based platform. I would love to do, like, the full transition to on for D&D, just because that's kind of been the mainstay lately. I have the, you know, the digital or the PDF copies of Dungeon World and a few other Powered by the Apocalypse games, but I don't have access, like ready access to, or I didn't have ready access to a virtual version of the D&D rules. I've actually working with a buddy of mine in a campaign. Hey, how you doing, Dave? And thank you. I've been checking out D&D Beyond to see how much I may like that. I really like how you can do searches, and it will allow you to like kind of cross search or cross reference multiple books depending upon what you've purchased. And he is a very generous man, and he actually has purchased most, if not all, the books. So it's cool to be able to kind of jump from one book to the next and just look at it by subject or whatever. But you know, it's kind of a leap. Yeah. I get into that realm of that frustrating realm of having to purchase multiple copies of the same thing.
I know.
So and then I have that anxiety that what if they stop developing this? What if, you know, Hasbro pulls the plug and it's like, oh my gosh, what do I do?
Well, yeah, with me though, I was like, I'm excited about the fact that I now have physical copies. So
yeah,
but you got lucky, man. I now own 2 copies of the Player's Handbook, 2 copies of the Monster Manual, 2 copies of the DMG. So
blessed.
Yeah, so cool. It's okay, but talking about virtual tabletops,
it brings it up.
Yeah, it brings it up.
It brings it up. Come on.
We've got to talk about this. Yeah. You may have noticed that in Tavern last week, I posted a link to a Reddit article, and also I posted a picture on my Facebook of a dumpster on fire with Roll20 written on it. And you guys know that me and Jeff, we like to have a little banter back and forth about the differences between Roll20 and why Fantasy Grounds is better. But
wow.
But the thing is, though, I stepped into a world I shouldn't really stepped into. At first, when I first saw that article on Reddit, the post on Reddit, I was like, oh my goodness, Jeff is going to see this and he's going to realize why Fantasy Grounds is a whole lot better than Roll20. I'm so excited. I posted the article to the Tavern. I'd already sent in links to the link to the subreddit, you know, in text messages, and all these people are making good points that I can never articulate as well because I never used Roll20.
You were making your case.
Yes, I was making my case. Anyway, so, you know, and I got into it a little deeper and deeper, and then the next day, the video started coming out, and this is from some of the larger guys in the industry that do a lot of Twitch streaming of D&D games, and then, you know, in previous videos, they had used Roll20, but they had switched over to Fantasy Grounds and never really explained why, and they finally did. And, you know, because they had sort of a contract with Roll20 and the guys that run it, you know, to run their streams for them, and they'll give them premium accounts for free. You know, it's $10 a month, right? What, $10, $12 a month?
How much is that premium? Yeah, I pay the $10.
Okay, so anyway, so these guys get this for free, and they said that one day they finally logged in, and it's like, you're out of storage, you don't have a premium account anymore, and they call Roll20. And the guy who runs the PR department told them, it's like, listen, I do not want to work with 5 white guys anymore. I now have a female of color or a different ethnicity. They didn't really explain too much about that. That is going to run a Twitch stream for us, and you guys are fired. And when that right there hit me, it's like somebody sacked me in the stomach. You know, I'm a middle-aged white guy. And I understand our hobby is saturated with guys like me. I understand that. And you know, I know it's going to happen, you know, that where every Twitch stream is usually a white guy. But this is the first time in my life, though, that I've ever felt this pain in my stomach before. You know, I grew up poor. I'm fat. I'll admit that. I'm a fat dude. And, you know, I've been picked on for my weight, and I've been picked on for the fact of how much little money I had growing up. But those were things I could change. I couldn't change the fact that I was white and I was a guy. And it really bothered me. So much to the fact, I'm going to use a word that Jeff hates. I was automatically woke.
Wow.
I realized that this feeling that I feel right now is what people of other genders and other races feel. I shouldn't say races. I only believe in one race, the human race. But other colors feel on a daily basis because they can't change the reason why people don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
And it brought me to my knees last week that it took literally somebody insulting a game franchise or a group that I listen to and watch to get me to actually think about. I was disgusted with myself and I felt really ashamed. I'm not, by any stretch of the means, a person that believes that I'm better than anybody because I'm a dude or because I'm white. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a racist. Just for the fact that it took me this long to realize that there's really people out there that feel this way every single moment of every single day.
Yeah.
And it bothered me.
It's taken me a while to kind of like see it again, because I grew up in the South. I grew up in Texas, and I refer to myself humorously as a halfie, because I'm half Mexican, half white. Mm-hmm. And back when I was younger, I had a much darker complexion. So I looked Mexican. There were times when, you know, my mom and I would, you know, would go somewhere, go to a restaurant, go to a store, and, you know, they'd see her, because she was the white side of the equation. My father, not in the picture any longer, by the time I was three, was the Mexican side of the equation. So, you know, they'd see my mom first, and then they would see me, and sometimes they would say, you know, like, is he adopted? And I'd have to ask my mom, what does that mean, being adopted? And then, you know, we'd have to talk about that. And sometimes, you know, you'd get that look. And my mom told me about times when she would go and look for an apartment, and, you know, my father would be out parking the car, and they would say, yeah, we've got a few apartments available. And then he would come up and they'd say, oh, you know what? We're all leased. It's something that I dealt with at a very younger, much younger mentality before we moved out to Southern California. And I very honestly don't see it as much out here. And that could be just because of the state of California. It could be the state of Southern California. You know, a lot of woke people out here. So yeah. Put it that way. And then plus, as I've gotten older, you know, I haven't had to deal with it too much personally because of my complexion has faded. I am an interior animal. I am a nerd. I am overweight. So I have lack of activity, which basically exhibits itself in my very fair complexion at this point.
Right.
So, and the only time I've felt it again was after getting married. You know, I married a woman of Filipina descent. And we saw that overseas. You know, we've seen it here ever so often. And then my wife shelters me sometimes from the things that she has to deal with as a woman and also a person of Asian descent. And because she knows how angry I get about it, that people are, you know, would discriminate. So when I entered into this equation or into this situation, the whole Roll 20. So that's kind of a little backdrop to bring me up to speed on the conversation. I don't want to use any of like the catchphrases or anything on this. So I'm going to kind of approach it from my kind of very simplified view of it. When I saw this, I saw the video you were talking about how they had approached the PR person at Roll 20. This group of guys, very popular. Very popular YouTube channels. I mean, thousands of subscribers. Collectively, it was like in the tens of thousands. I think it was incredible, right? And you know, unfortunate for them, in the eyes of the PR person, they were three white guys, or however many. I think there was five white guys.
Yeah, five white guys. Yeah.
And so the person turned and basically said, yeah, like you said, they have no need of five white guys. They can go and they can find females. They can find folks of different genders. They can find folks of, you know, different color to represent what they saw was their kind of public face, the people who use the platform. And yeah, you know, that there's a point at which where We need to be woke to the situation, okay? And that's the last time I'm going to use that word. We need to be.
Well, I'm officially titling this right now, The Awokening.
Okay, that's going into the record. We're going to call this The Awokening.
Okay. I'm
typing it right now. Oh my gosh, God help me, I'm actually doing this. You're catching me at a weak moment, at a woke moment. All right, no, that's it. I'm done. I'm not using it anymore.
It's all right.
But there's a point where we need to decide, are we going to see color or are we not going to see color? Are we going to use kind of a way of saying, you know what, I'm going to create an even playing field and I'm just going to say, okay, no more white people or white guys need to apply. We're going to try and backfill this with people who are interested in the hobby and who are of different descent or different gender. And let's just get this out there and we're going to force it. We're going to force it to happen. I kind of see, I see that perspective just simply because we need to get those doors blasted off their hinges, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've always believed in the slingshot effect, mm-hmm. which means that when something's pulled in one direction for so long, when it's finally released, it's going to swing in the other direction a little bit before it right. equalizes out.
Absolutely.
And people are going to need to realize this, and that it happens in politics.
Mm-hmm.
It happens everywhere. And, you know, it hurts for a while, especially yeah. if you are the person on the receiving end of that.
Yeah, because think about all the people who are having to, or not having to, but I almost want to say folks get to acknowledge the hurt.
Right.
Right. All this time is just, this has been the norm. This is how the world works. But then all of a sudden, it's like, it's okay for me to say,
yeah,
this sucks.
Yeah.
Right. This hurt me. I was hurt. You know, there's so many examples to use. And I keep hemming and hawing on the episode. I don't know if I'm going to edit this out or not, but there is this swing, this slingshot effect that's happening now that is actually showing that there's more people out there interested in this hobby. There's a lot more diverse people interested in this hobby. And I think that's been the good effect of it. But then we start to see the opposite end of it, right? We start to see what happened with Roll 20. And that wasn't even the reason why this whole thing germinated, right? It was because a guy was, he didn't respond well to a person's complaint in a Reddit forum. Oh, yeah. But then it emerged into... it escalated. And then we started to see some other things that were going on.
Well, that's because everybody wanted to make Roll 20 out to be the bad guy. And everybody was coming out of the woodworks. And it happens a lot on YouTube.
I think it's to a small extent. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think rightfully
they
so.
They jump on the bandwagon because they want more views because of what's going on this thing. And so, but I'm not trying to say what I felt was any akin to what any of my other friends feel when they have been discriminated against. Well, I realize
don't go that far. I think you're you're entitled to those feelings.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but what I'm saying is it's different for me to be a little upset over a comment of a video game manufacturer made, and I'm going to label him as a video game manufacturer because it's a video format we play games on.
It's using coding, it's using imagery.
The little hurt that I felt there versus the fact that one of my best friends, if he's walking down the street at an inappropriate time, can be shot by the police. Mm. It's a little bit different.
No, that's true. Absolutely. Yeah. We're not doing like a moral equivalency here to that. It's I think what's...
I just want everybody to know that I understand that there's a big difference there.
Of course.
I felt just a little drop of what these people feel every dang day. And I didn't like it. I don't like it. And I never want to feel that way again. But I also want to make it to where nobody else feels this way ever again.
I think it's a good result of an ugly situation, right? It's a good result of an ugly situation where you're seeing the field a little bit more accurately. And what's interesting about this is that it's the shouting and the dumpster fire that emerged from this actually got you into the right place to think on the experience that you had or experiences that you've had and to reframe it in a positive way. You know, you were able to kind of distill the shouting and the, how did you phrase it? The tears of the Reddit.
Reddit's the tears of the internet.
There you go. You were able to go through the tears of the internet and actually see more clearly. I think that's great. And I agree, you know, there's not a way for us to kind of really equate to the long-term and ongoing experience that's occurring out there.
Yeah.
But at least we can see it more clearly for what it is. So, this whole thing, you know, the nuts and bolts of what was going on with Roll 20, I think is reflective of of how the message can get lost in the shouting, right?
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing spawned from somebody getting kicked off of kicked off of Reddit and trying to get that situation cleared up. It turns out it was wrongfully kicked from the forum. He responded and escalated rapidly, but then Roll20 didn't respond appropriately, right? They didn't respond. I don't want to say too quickly, because I think they need, as a company, as a PR, they should be allowed to take some time to come up with a proper answer.
Yeah, I think,
but
one of the
they
main
didn't,
things,
right?
Yeah,
they didn't.
The one of the main things, though, with the whole, what we learned in the videos later down the road, is that their PR person needs to learn tack.
There you go. And that's where it went wrong.
Yeah. But from him not knowing tack, which is a good thing, God works in mysterious ways, guys.
Yes, he does.
Oh,
yes,
it broadened my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got a woke sandwich.
Dang it, you used it again. I'm editing that out.
No, you're
so
not.
Help me.
No, you're
so
not.
Help me.
No, but seriously though, it's, we just gotta remember that when we're playing our games, where we're imagining the fact that we're elves and dwarves and trolls and orcs and of different complexions of green and light-faired skin and dragonborn, that, you know, we need to have our tables always open. We need to be always accepting at our tables. Because me and Jeff, we play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons. We do.
Too much.
No, I wouldn't say too much. But we've got to remember that. And that person at that table is just another player no matter what.
Right.
You know, whether that person is of African descent, of, you know, from Central America, person that, you know, that's not of the same orientation as you, whether it be the fact that they are homosexual, bisexual, pansexual. If they want to play D&D with you, let them play D&D with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we can't witness to people if they're not at our tables.
Right. And there is a unique opportunity of playing this game.
Yeah.
Or actually, you know what, let's broaden it, right? You know, board games, video games, role-playing games, there's going to be situations where you're going to be around other people.
Yeah.
Right? And the focus, I mean, I'm going to give context and I'm going to jump back to that. Context here is that my father-in-law passed away 2 days ago, and I reached out for prayer, you know, for the family and for my wife and I, and because of this ministry, because of being able to connect with people of all walks of life, all over the world. I mean, and it's so cool to actually use the word literally here in a proper tense, literally all around the world. I get responses back, just, hey, we're praying for you. What are some specific things that we can pray about? What are some, you know, things that we can do? I received a bouquet of flowers from somebody in the middle of America that I only met through this ministry, you know, flowers for our family. And these are the wonderful opportunities we have of being around the table and just, you know, we're playing D&D, we're playing Halo on co-op, we're playing, you know, Fury of Dracula because you had a miracle and were able to afford the board game. All of these things we're having a chance to play, but we're at the heart of it, we're around the table with people that we can love. We have that opportunity. So you know, again, kind of bringing it back to this, is that having these opportunities to be together, there should be no barriers to it. And even in times of conflict, if you're approaching this table as a place of love, even when you have disagreements, you can do so with proper discourse, and not have to get shouty like we saw on Reddit.
Yeah,
you know, you praise God were able to kind of sift through that and to be able to actually come to a very important truth.
Yeah, about myself.
No,
not
no,
about Roll 20 though.
Well, no, get out of here about that. We can talk about that in a moment. But it's being able to approach it in that way is important. So when you have situations where there's disagreements at the table, you can, because you've spent so much time loving on these people and getting to know them, knowing how they tick, you can de-escalate the fire,
yeah,
and actually get to the discourse.
Oh yeah.
There's ways we do that in the faith, right? I mean, I know not everybody who listens to the show are Christians, and that's fine. You know, we love you anyway. We want you around our table. It doesn't matter. Yeah. We want to steal from your imagination and put it into our games. That's what we want.
We want to eat your brains.
We need your brains.
Yes.
But there's something that we do, and you were just at Bible study, you said, before the show, right? What's one of the things that you do, like, kind of that you do every time at a Bible study, at a fellowship like that?
We pray.
We pray. And what? How do you know what to pray for?
Well, we talk to each other, you know. We pray for the group as a whole. I mean, you know, when we first start out, we pray that God opens our minds to His Word, and you know, we work through it. And as we're in the Bible study, we may learn something from somebody and realize that they might need prayer afterwards. And then as we close, we'll bring that up in closure. And that's it. I mean, the key is talking to people.
Amen. You have the concept of ASK, or ask, seek, and knock.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's not like the Lord doesn't know your heart and doesn't know your mind. He's going to know. But He wants us to voice those things.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how small or how big. And the great thing is that we get to share these things with each other. You know, we can hold each other accountable for things that we're struggling with. We can hold each other up with the things that we're struggling with. And we can better share love when it comes to knowing more people, knowing more about each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I remember that you mentioned you went to Bible study, and that brought that to mind, of things that we use as in our faith. Of how that can be used universally. You know, it could just be used universally when it comes to getting to know people, and in so doing, better being able to handle conflict that comes up.
Well, I mean, it's just like in counseling, you know, one of the things we do is we ask everybody just to step back for a moment, you know. And, you know, I may ask somebody to tell me their grievances while the other person just sits there and listens. And, you know, we don't let them argue it during that period. And then, you know, then I let the other person say their grievances and not rebuttal against the other person for what they just said. But therefore, they just opened their eyes to the other person, you know, to each other. And it's part of it, too. I mean, it's just like we never sit down and listen as a culture anymore. We listen enough to where we know it's our turn to interject our opinion.
Mm. Yeah.
So, I mean, people might skim an article, get the headlines, and think they know everything about it, and then bring up an argument or something like that. But the issue is, though, I mean, we don't listen. We need to listen. I mean, that's something we tell the kids in D&D. I mean, like, my kids, I said, this, the most important thing that you're going to do at this table is to listen to me. Mm-hmm. Not to speak, not to roll dice, but to listen. Because the things that I'm telling you in this story, you're going to need to know. And that's one of the reasons why I like Dungeons & Dragons so much, is because it develops that skill.
Wow, I think I've probably thought about that before, but at the same time, it's like, to have kind of a focused concept on that's really cool about being able to use that to help develop listening skills.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's really great.
So, I mean, that's why you got to start them young and you break them. I mean, like,
wow.
Like, it's like breaking
you
a
break,
horse.
You break their spirit.
Well, no, it's just the fact that their first campaign, they might miss something completely off, and they might die just for the fact that they didn't listen to something I said, a hint that I dropped, or weren't paying attention when I was talking.
Well, let's make sure, you know, for folks who may not know role-playing games, that's a good chance. You know, this is a lot of times the big focus here is for board games. And when me and Daniel get turned loose on this, sometimes we'll go straight into RPG world.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
No, not at all. Nothing to be sorry about. So I think just as a concept here, when you're doing it, you're playing a role-playing game, you have a game master. In D&D terms, it's the dungeon master. And they're going to share the story with the players around them, and the players react to that story, and that's what they do. But the importance that Daniel's pointing out here, which is an amazing point here, is that you need to listen closely to what the dungeon master is saying, because they are describing, you know, a hallway that you're walking down, and there's two doors, left and right. The left door says, there's a bomb behind here, and the right door says, there's a pleasant meadow. And if you're not listening, you may say, I'm going to open the left door. No, there's a bomb. Boom. You know, your character dies. So it really develops listening skills. My mom used to say, there's a difference between listening and hearing. Listening, you're actually listening for the context, the definition, the actual words that are being put together. Hearing, you're just hearing the noise. And like you said, another excellent point, you're waiting for your turn to speak.
Paying more attention to what you're going to say than what you should be thinking about and getting ready to say.
Mm-hmm.
If you've already got your response to somebody thought up before they're done speaking, you need to stop and rethink your response when you get done listening to them, because if not, there's a word for you and I can't use it on the air.
Stop it.
But yeah.
But no, that's so, oh my gosh, it is so true. We hear the first few words, kind of like what you were saying when you're reading an article, you read the first few words, the title and stuff, and you draw your own conclusions as rapidly as possible.
And you're an expert.
Yeah, and you're an expert, exactly. And
Twitter does this to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, Twitter's bad about it. I mean, because you've only got so many words to get your point across or a link to an article. Who's going to click the link and leave Twitter? I mean.
Yeah, no, I say it that way because I am just as guilty. I'll just kind of flash through.
But Reddit's the same way. Because you're a Twitter junkie. I'm a Reddit junkie.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, Reddit, you know, half the time those guys don't even come up with their own titles. They just put a URL in there and let the system generate a title. But, I mean, I literally flip through the titles looking at something I might find interesting.
Right.
You know, and, you know, that's it for me. I mean, and it's like that in every system. I mean, an ecosystem in social media. I mean, that's just part of it. I mean, but it's bad, though. I mean, because
it's almost like it almost like promotes jumping to conclusions.
Yeah. Well, it happens in work, too. How often do you read a subject line and not click open the email, but already form an opinion of what is inside that email before you even read it?
Especially when it's that opinion can be derived from the concert of said title and the name of sender.
Yes. We have somebody like that we work with. And my coworker, who I share an office with, if this person sends an email out that I'm attached to and he's attached to, before he even clicks on it, he's already cussing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it could be, Merry Christmas. He's already mad. I mean, but that's just, it happens everywhere. It happens
at
work.
If you click this link, I'm going to give you money.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating. I mean, it's just, and I'm bad. I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm bad about it. My daughter's getting to be that way because we let her have an Instagram account, and Instagram's probably the only one that's not like that, because all you're doing is thumbing through pictures.
Yeah, and unless you're trying to do some kind of Instagram series, you're not really there to get a point across, right?
No, you're just showing pictures of your life.
I don't think.
But I can get into that whole thing of people taking perfect pictures for Instagram. You know, I think.
Well, that's why I stay off of it, because every picture I take is perfect. So
yeah, well, Craig Rochelle, he's the pastor over at Life Church, and he wrote a book called Death the Selfie, mm-hmm. and it's a good book. We did it as a Bible study, and it's all about how social media, one, it depresses you.
Yes.
It's just the way it is. And the reason behind it is the fact that you're seeing everybody's highlight reels. You're not seeing any of their bloopers. Nobody's going to post their bloopers on Facebook unless they really
unless they're out to get hits. You mean, right. They want people to like.
But you're seeing the highlights. There's he was actually talking about one couple who, you know, like at their church. I'm not sure if it was their church or not, but I think he knew them. But the wife would. They would go to a place and, like, say they went out to eat one day, and she would literally go into the bathroom and change her top so he could take pictures of her in a different top so she could post them at a later date.
It would look like, yeah, you can just kind of, it's kind of like if we recorded 3 episodes of Game Store Profits in a row so we can release them press release style.
Well, that's a good idea. But you see what I'm saying, though? I mean, it's like that guy who tags himself at a restaurant that he's 100 miles away from, right, just so people think he's at a really fancy restaurant. And you know, it's what we want to present ourselves to the world. And so, like, that right there is another reason why I hate Facebook. I hate Reddit, but I'm addicted to it.
And for our ministry, we have to be a part of it for sure.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's true. I mean, it's a conjunction here. Conjunction function. What? No, I'm just kidding. So you actually.
I'm just a bill.
I'm just a bill. I'm capital.
It's showing our age, guys, because we were there when they originally were written.
That's right. I liked it. Okay. We see how we put our best foot forward on Facebook or on Twitter or even Instagram on some level, I'm sure. But it's almost like we're trying to cater to the people who like to jump to conclusions based on just seeing the title.
Right.
Right? We want to have a title out there that is going to grab their attention in a positive way, right?
Yeah.
I think a great example of that is the top 10 things on YouTube, right? Top 10 things you missed in Avengers Infinity. And then they just take a random screenshot of of the movie and they put a circle with an arrow in it.
Yeah.
It's like, what did I miss?
But you know how many times I've clicked on that? And websites like Diply, Ranker, oh my goodness. When that comes up in my feed, I'm like, oh crap, there's a 20 list of most haunted places. And it's all stuff I already know about. Stupid stuff like that. And I'm just like, I'm going to click on it anyway.
And it puts your brain right into that jump to conclusion mode, right?
Yeah.
Because you conclude immediately that these are the 10 things that I probably missed, or these are the 10 scariest places I have to see it, right?
Yeah.
It promotes that whole thing. And, you know, tying it back to the dumpster fire of Roll 20, right? I mean, the idea that people just jumped on this, and the initial guy who got kicked off, the conclusion that was jumped to by Roll 20 was that this guy is, you know, part of another he's the same person that got banned before for saying something negative. And that's a whole other conversation, the idea that you don't want to have negative comments in your forums. But anyway, so, you know, they jumped to that conclusion. And then this guy jumped to the conclusion because they didn't respond to him quickly enough that they weren't going to do anything. And then this guy jumped to the conclusion over at Roll 20 that he doesn't want to deal with these types of people. So I'm going to jump to the conclusion and not deal with them. And then all of a sudden the fire starts getting bigger and bigger because nobody took the time to hear each other. Or not hear, but actually listen. They were just hearing. They weren't listening. And actually saying, okay, here's what's going on. And there's a deeper meaning to it, right? Because all of a sudden things come out. We start to distill through the noise and we get to some things. Like the very beginning, we talked about the video of, you know, the 5 white guys that didn't get the job because, you know, because of whatever reasons that were decided at Roll 20. You know, we get to the core of it that says, hey, you know what? We've all noticed that Roll 20 doesn't like to have criticism. At least the PR people don't want to see criticism in the forums.
All right, yeah.
And it I'm gonna use it one more time, but you get woke because you start to get through.
Jeff's new favorite
you start
word, to sift people. Through
it. Yeah, I've been banning that word. You start filtering through it. And it got you back to the point of where you recognize something that you hadn't recognized before.
Oh yeah.
Right? Because you were put into that position. I wouldn't say you didn't recognize it, but you actually felt it through and through. At that point.
Yeah, like, I knew it was there.
Yeah, exactly. I knew it was there.
And, You know, even, you know, I grew up with Bugs Bunny. I grew up with all that stuff. Like, you know, those cartoons where you'd see Bugs Bunny dressed in drag, or you'd see them making fun of... Tom and Jerry was really bad about making fun of people of other colors. That's what I grew up with.
Right.
And so, like, I have, for a long time, had a little jaded thought in my head, you know, I don't discriminate against people, but I didn't mind stereotypes.
No, no, you're right. That's exactly right. There was a promotion of that being okay.
And I was made aware of that I didn't think that was a form of racism.
Yeah.
And so, actually a few months back, my wife and my small group sat down with me about that, saying, "You're being racist." I'm like, "What do you mean?" And, you know, because I made a comment, I think, about basketball, you know, and, you know, one of my friends in my small group, he's black. And and I made a comment about basketball, and they said, "Listen, man, you're being racist about this." I'm like, "I don't think, you know, that I'm any better than him. I don't think, you know, and that's not," but they said, "When you put a stereotype to someone who, based on their race, that is the same as," and it wasn't like a derogatory stereotype either, you know. And what I said was something like, "Man, you must really like basketball."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I didn't think that was bad. But then they pointed that out to me. So that made me more aware a few months back of things I was saying. But, like, I didn't know I was being hurtful because we were friends. I joke around a lot. But it turns out that it was a little hurtful because it was a stereotype. And I didn't realize that.
And here's the difference between being a racist and not being a racist is that changed you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that changed me. Yeah,
and you're willing to change that up.
It took a few weeks though of me mulling it over and thinking about it, and I was frustrated with myself, but I was frustrated because I felt like they changed the definition of racism.
Mm-hmm.
And because to me that's not the definition I'd ever been given as a child, or as a teenager, or as a young adult. You know, my idea of racism.
But there's a perspective change here.
Yes. And so it took a while for that. It took me and me many, many, many conversations with some friends about it that, you know, that don't believe in things like that. Like, as far as they think that we're in a war of words, changing meanings and stuff like that. But like, the more I thought about it and the more I sat down with it, you know, it kind of bothered me, but, you know. Well, not kind of, but it did. But this really right here was what ripped the Band-Aid off. I mean, just feeling an ounce of what they feel like, you know.
And it takes that. It takes that sometimes. I think you're right on point here. And this is a very sensitive topic. And I want everybody out there to know that we absolutely appreciate the sensitivity of this topic. It's such an important thing for context to be there, for perspectives to be changed, so that hearts can change. And the willingness obviously has to be there. Your heart, being a Christian, being somebody who knows that hearts can harden or hearts can be softened if allowed to, knowing that your heart can change is very important. Being willing to change is very important. Because to your perspective and mine to an extent as well, sometimes the old jokes, the old ways of seeing things, the old songs, the old movies. I mean, you go back and you look at movies from the 70s, the 80s, even the 90s.
Yeah.
The horrific stereotypes that are out there. Even, I'll say it, even today, some of the stereotypes that are out there are just not appropriate because we are shifting perspectives. This whole change in society, the good things that are coming out of this, you know, again, like, you know, pulling the goodness out of the dumpster fire that occurred with Roll 20, the goodness that's coming out of these drastic and huge movements is the idea that you need to see things from another person's perspective. you need to be able to say, you know what, yeah, you know, we, as kids, we all watched Tom and Jerry, we all watched Bugs Bunny, but from the perspective of somebody that they may be mocking, yeah, those things can hurt, especially if you're a kid. Those things become indelibly marked on your psyche, and what you've gone through, and what I've gone through in several instances, is the idea of that perspective change, so that you really get it. You say, you know what? At first, I was thinking, yeah, it's just a silly war on words, and they're trying to make things out to being worse than they really are. And it's, you get to that realization, you're like, oh my gosh, no, it is. It is that bad. It can be that hurtful, right? So I mean, we've really spent a good deal of time, like, kind of making that turn, right?
Yeah.
Of talking about how our faith can make a difference with how our heart hardens or softens, how we handle group dynamics,
yeah.
Right? When we spend time praying about each other, we get tired of saying the same thing, like, Lord, please protect them and please keep their drive home safe or their drive to the game safe. We want to get into the meat potatoes of what we're praying about. Like, you know, you mentioned last week that you were sick. You know, how is that going? Or, hey, your father passed away and we want to send you flowers from across the country. Or because people care. You care more about them, so you...
It's kind of like those generic prayers that we say like that, because it comes from a good place. The prayers definitely come from a good place. But just to the fact that we don't acknowledge the people that what they're going through, like, or remember that, it's kind of like almost slapping them in the face saying, listen, sorry, bro. You weren't enough for me to remember what you're dealing with right now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we need to look at the New Testament. I mean, and I'll just point this out right now. People see the Bible, and if you don't study and are really good in what you do, as far as your theology, if you don't really put yourself into it, that, best way to word this. Almost everything that Paul wrote was a personable letter to someone or to a church. And that was because, you know, he heard something and felt he needed to address it. So we need to be like that. I mean, we need to understand, like, you know, people want to be remembered. You know, they mm-hmm. want you to remember them. Not that they want to make an imprint on you, but they want to know that they mean enough to be significant in your life just a little bit. I mean, whether it's remembering their name or remembering what they're going through.
Yep.
And see, I'm bad about names, but because I can't remember. I work with scouts all year long.
I know your face, and I know that you come from here, and I know you do this, but I can't remember your name.
It's like, hey, you over there, go over here and do this. But I remember, like, hey, how did you do on that test? Or, you know, last week you may have cut your, like, I had a kid that cut his finger 1 week. How's your finger doing? You know, and things like that. And you know, the kids understand that you care about them. And it's just the same way with adults.
Gosh, it makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I'm bad about it. I mean, even in small group, which our small groups meet on Thursdays. And like, Daniel, do you want to lead in prayer? I'm like, sure. Dear Lord, you heard all these prayer requests. It's not. I just put them under.
I just lift them up. You know what they are.
I mean, we do it because.
Of course, we do that.
Yeah.
That's when we're spending time here and not listening.
Right. And so, you know, in that phone, man, I have to put my phone down during prayer requests.
You got to put it down. You got to listen. Yeah. You got to listen.
But, yeah, it's just people want to be heard. People want to be, you know, people want you to listen to their grievances.
How much does that make a difference for you when that happens? When somebody comes to you and says, hey, I remember you mentioned last week about this going on. I've been thinking about that.
It surprises me. It really does. I'm like, whoa, this dude cares.
It feels good.
Yeah, it does. I mean, this really guy good. Really likes me or something like that. So,
yeah.
So it's just one of those things, but it's good.
And we get to do that in so many situations. I mean, we get spoiled when it comes to, you know, times of fellowship, when it comes to, you know, Bible studies or small groups or going to church, that sort of thing. But the thing is, we're like super spoiled because we also get game times. We get game nights, you know. Yeah, we get to sit around the table with people from all over the world and know what they're going through, and to be able to just take a leap of faith and just ask the questions, you know, what's going on? And they'll say, oh, we're good. And it's like, yeah, I want a little bit more. As your game master, I demand more.
Yeah.
I want to know more what's going on.
I mean, we've talked in the past about, like, my mental issues and Mike's mental issues. And so, like, one of the things that being a person who's depressed with anxiety issues that I get, it makes me more aware of my surroundings and the way people treat me. And so when somebody
hyper aware almost, right?
Yeah, it's really weird. So, like, and it gets to a point where we have to kind of, like, ignore it, because if we don't, it drives us insane. And so, like if somebody's upset, well, the first thing it runs through your mind for the first 30 minutes is, are they upset with me?
Oh, my gosh.
But if we can get past that part of where we think that they're upset with, you know, yourself, that's when you say, listen, dude, you seem a little off today. Is there anything I can help you with? You just made yourself aware that they're not feeling 100% themselves, and they may be off that day, and they may need help. They just don't know how to ask for it.
And you're turning the focus away from you
back to
them. You're turning it outward.
And
that, as a fellow sufferer of anxiety and depression, is the best cure. Well, not cure, but it's the best remedy for the symptoms. It helps so much because you're not thinking about yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You're turning it outward. I was thinking, like, this society, how we jump to conclusions. I do that so much with myself, like what you're talking about with anxiety, how you just jump to those conclusions, like, are they angry with me or something to that effect.
Yeah. And it gets on people's nerves, too, guys, when we're like this. I'll tell you this. If you ever work with me on a project, nope, you're not going to like me. You're gonna hate me 6 ways from Sunday.
Stop it.
It's like you're going to be like, oh, man, this guy Daniel's annoying. He's always asking, did I do something wrong? Did I do something wrong?
Seriously, turn it around and ask them if there's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
I should do that. Is there something wrong with you, boy? Sorry. Anyway.
I think this really turned into a good topic. We turned the dumpster fire of my tears for Roll 20 into something positive.
Yeah.
And I will admit to you on air that I have been practicing a little bit more with Fantasy Grounds.
What?
I have been. Not with the idea that I'm going to leave Roll 20 behind. And I'll say this is why. The community of Roll 20 that puts together all of this work and the character sheets and the coding and stuff is more... The sum of that community is more than the smaller parts of the PR people who mess things up.
You're in an open ecosystem, and Fantasy Grounds is in a closed ecosystem.
Yeah. And you know what? Hey, Fantasy Grounds, they're run by a great group of people.
To a sense. Because Fantasy Grounds, when you get into the meat and potatoes of what's going on, like, maybe there is a game manufacturer that doesn't bite.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, there'll be someone there that is a Fantasy Grounds fan that wants to play a certain game in that, and they will go in and write what needs to be written for that game to be played.
Right.
So, like, I'll give you an example. When it really got me was the 2D20 system from Modiphius. So, like, I got a few of those books at Gen Con, and I was like, man, I'd really like to play this game on Roll20. But Modiphius didn't do anything, so I did a little research. Somebody took one of the main rules sets they call the core, which is just a basic generic
core 2D.
And they wrote their own. They changed the character sheet down. They changed the rule set just so it works with that game. And that does happen on Fantasy Grounds. I will tell you that you just don't see it like you see it on Roll 20 because web APIs. I'm getting ready to nerd out on you guys a little bit because this is what I do for a living. I write software. That's my job. And I know one of my coworkers is listening to this podcast. And he's probably like, you write software not well. Just going to go there. Love you, Nick. I'm not as good as my coworkers, but I will say I write software. But it is easier to write a web API for, say, Roll20 than it is to turn around and write the lines and lines of XML that's required for Fantasy Grounds, because it's the Fantasy Grounds stuff gets a little bit more tedious because it's written with XML versus the web API stuff that can go back and reference a lot of the things that they need done. So you're getting a lot of bells and whistles over here on Roll20 because it's easier to write than it is in the...
Well, I wouldn't say it's so much bells and whistles. I would say variation.
Well,
I'd say variation. Like with Fantasy Grounds, it's beautiful and it's got lots of bells and whistles and very, very technically savvy.
Yeah.
Very solid program. With Roll20, you have, you know, you can pick up a random character sheet and it may not work great, but at least it has like the rules you need and you can just plunge forward like you do with, like you said, with the 2D20 system. So, but hey, you know what? That's what comes of listening to your friends who enjoy the things that they enjoy. And then that, when you're not trying to throw up roadblocks, you're not trying to start fights or, you know, not listen to the whole thing, you get a chance to actually enjoy the things that other people enjoy as well.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing it from their perspective, so. All right. What do you think?
Well, I just want to say, I think it's about time.
Yeah.
We need to call this one.
All right.
So, I just want to let everybody know that, remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice rolls, the game must go on.